It's a Friday edition of the Tall Can Audio Podcast. We are one day away from the beginning of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Matt Robinson along with you in the TCA studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada. Hope you've had a great week. Hope you're looking forward to a great weekend. I know I am. It'll be a lot of time in front of the television as hockey gets up and running. I don't know what's going on with the scheduling of the Western Conference. It looks like they're not starting for a couple of days yet. That's odd to me. But we're going to talk Leafs and Bruins today because that will be, for a lot of people, the main event. Whether it's because you love the Leafs or because you hate the Leafs, that's one of the reasons they draw the big ratings. Lots of people who watch just because they want to see bad things happen to the Toronto Maple Leafs. One of those is Rob. He's been on the show twice this week, the usual Monday show, but also a second episode. That was number 1295 on Wednesday, as we sort of put a bow on the Ottawa Senators series, if you want to go back and check that one out. On Thursday, a piece of audio that Lever Sage and I recorded a while ago that never got used while he was in Italy. It was supposed to be a stand-in replacement if he couldn't make it one week, but we didn't end up needing it. So we dropped it here this week, talking about the Tragically Hip. He and I trading a couple of hip stories, a couple of hip songs that we enjoy, and just, I don't know. It's always fun to talk about the Hip. So that was episode 1296, if you missed it. Rob will be back on Monday. I'm sure he'll have plenty to say about Game 1, Leafs and Bruins by then, and everything else that's gone on over the weekend. Jays are out in San Diego. So there'll be lots to talk about when he returns as well. But today, we're talking to our buddy Jeff Viette. He's going to help me tee up the Boston Bruins and Toronto Maple Leafs series. Jeff, thanks so much for making some time and jumping back on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. You?
I'm doing all right. I appreciate you coming back. You've been on the show the last couple of years to help tee up the season. I think this is the first time you've helped me tee up a playoff series. It's Leafs and Bruins again. Did you miss them? Are you looking forward to this one, man? Or were you kind of enjoying the break from the Bruins?
It's kind of wild when you think about it, because like it doesn't feel like it's been 5 years. It was such a like reoccurring dragon that it feels like it was just yesterday. But then it's like, okay, it's been half a decade. We look at the teams. Okay, well, they're actually almost entirely different.
Yeah,
different coaches on both ends. I think both teams have like less than a combined like 10 recurring players.
Well, the part that's making me crazy is everyone tying the 2013 series into this, and I get, for us fans, it's part of the story, it's part of the tale, but there's Brad Marchand is literally the only guy left on either one of these rosters who played in 2013.
Close.
I believe.
Close. Oh. One switch sides.
Oh,
JVR.
You're right. Yeah, okay. JVR was one of us, so he's now one of the Bruins, so that is an interesting piece. You're right. I'd forgotten about that little that wrinkle to it. But like, there's nobody in that Leaf locker room that's going, oh my God, it was 4-1. Like the other stuff, 2018-2019, that's fair game. But I'm kind of, the 13 feels like a stretch to me, man.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it kind of felt like a stretch even in 18 and 19.
Sure.
There was only a couple of guys left on Boston by that point, almost no one left. Actually, no, I don't think anybody left.
Probably just Bozak, right?
Yeah, but even Bozak was gone, I think, after 17. Like 17 was
you're right,
last
I think
year
that's
here.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So same goes for JVR. Those would have been like the last two kind of holdovers. I guess like Riley would have been around the team.
He'd been drafted. Like, as a,
he would have been like, he would have been like Black Ace for 13. But that's really the closest connection that was really left to it. Like management had completely changed, coaching had completely changed. Kind of on both ends too. So yeah, to me, 13's a bit of a distant memory. And yeah, now kind of looking at it, you're like, okay, actually, maybe there's not that much of a comparison between last time. But as long as the emblems and the rink stay the same, I don't think anyone's gonna feel comfortable with this matchup until they finally get through.
Sure, I certainly understand why fans feel the way they do. I just can't imagine it's quite the same for the players.
Of course,
yeah. So, look, before we get into this actual matchup, I'm curious, you know, they talked a lot about last summer, Brad Treliving specifically used the term snot. He wanted more of a playoff type roster. And That's why we ended up with Bertuzzi, which didn't start off all that great. He certainly played better down the stretch. I think you could probably say the same for Domi. At the deadline, they lead into it again with bringing back Lyubushkin and Edmondson. And look, you've been one of the people who's been banging this drum for a while that the problem hasn't been defense. The problem really hasn't been snot, if people want to use that term. It's that they can't score in the playoffs. Now, I guess if we're being fair, the Domi and Bertuzzi additions, while they're hoping those are more playoff guys, should also help with that secondary scoring issue. Yeah. Having seen 82 games of this, do you believe that this version of the Leafs is better set up for playoff hockey, or is this just, you know, one of those old hockey tropes that we're kind of being led again or fed again?
It's tough. I mean, I think it mostly leans to the latter in terms of the overall picture of it. But there's also benefits to some of the players as well. Like you said, like Bertuzzi can play hockey. Domi can play hockey. Those two, especially Domi after November. And then I'd say Bertuzzi had been good to an extent throughout the year, but didn't really have it click for him until the last 25-30 games or so. Mm-hmm. But like those guys contribute to your team in other ways. Now when you kind of start going down the lineup with things, it starts getting a little bit muddier. Like I didn't really like the deadline, how it seemed to be getting a bunch of guys who were all like normally depth auxiliary pieces to play more serious minutes because of their reputations. Like there's a value in having one or two, usually one, I guess we would call them hammers, if they don't have top end ability. Sometimes you get really lucky and you get a guy who can play hockey at a high level and is also a hammer. Jake Muzzin was one of those guys, and boy does this team wish they kind of had someone like him right now.
Yeah.
But then you looked at it and it was like, okay, well, Simone Benoit exceeded her expectations a little bit and has kind of become that guy that you can use as somewhere between a very low four to a high 5-6, or have him with someone who's a little bit more skilled that can elevate him a bit. Him and Jake McCabe had a stretch where they were really good together, and it was like, okay, that's one of those guys. Then when Lyubushkin and Edmondson come in, you're like, okay, well, they just traded for the same guy twice. And then Cade Weber gets acquired, and you're like, okay, well, now they've acquired a future version of the same guy, and this just seems like through the direction where things are going here. So in parts of the lineup, like I think there's something there with the forwards that they brought in that regard. I'll even give some credit to Ryan Reeves. He had a much better second half after his injury than his first half. Still, what probably wouldn't have signed that deal in July, but he showed up and turned back the clock a little bit. I'll give him the credit there. The blue line, I don't so much like. Now the overall picture of what that is, that might be the saving grace on this year. I think one thing we've talked about before is the Leafs have never really felt like they have a distinct identity in this window. One way or another, and I think that's one thing I do believe in, is you got to kind of lean into something. For me, it would have been leaning all into being the offensive skill team, and then they kind of switched over to this trying to be jack of all trades situation. The push for the quote unquote snot did seem to give them something to rally around.
Sure.
Even the guys who weren't all that great, they kind of contribute to that being like, okay, this is our routine. We're going to be a bit more in your face every night. It's a little bit different than when it's just the one guy, be it Michael Bunting before, Nassim Kadri, so on and so forth. When you have a bunch of guys on the same page, kind of making your direction, there's at least a collective play style happening there. So that part I like. The play, the skill on the top end of those additions, I like. I think some of the guys they brought in are going to struggle at this stage of the season, and the playoff reputation thing is going to be kind of a moot point for them when they actually have to face better players.
Right, and I'm sort of curious, so as we sort of bring Boston into this, I've been saying on the show for a little while now that if you were going to force me to choose between Boston and Florida in round one, I'll take my chances with Boston, I think. I still don't think you're the favorite there, but I think that's a better matchup. And yet, as I say that, I'm keenly aware that we lost every matchup to them this year. So that's working against me a little bit. But my logic has sort of been, you need, with what you're paying these guys and how this team is built, you need Tavares and Matthews to be able to at least saw off Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha. You got to hope that Mitch Marner, I understand they're a different type of player, but can saw off and be the equal of David Pastrnak. And then you've got Nylander, who you kind of need to be better and put up more points than Marchand in this series. And if that happens, I like Toronto's forward depth a lot better than Boston's after that. The defense is a far less, good-looking setup for us. The goaltending certainly favors Boston. But when you were sort of watching this come down the stretch, did you have a preference as to who you thought Toronto would match up better against?
I'm not a big believer when it comes to having preferences on this kind of stuff. I think at the end of the day, what's important is your team having the momentum and building on their own style, as you come through. Now when you kind of look at the two teams that they could have faced, whether it was Boston or Florida, there are arguments one way or another, right? With Boston, I understand the idea of, well, actually, just looking at the rosters, there isn't, as you alluded to, there isn't the amount of depth there compared to Florida or even to Boston themselves a couple years ago. Yeah. Like Pavel Zacha had a great last 25 games. He's finishing the season strong, but he's not a guy you would normally expect to see as a number one center. The fact that him and Charlie Coyle both finish at 59 and 60 points this season and aren't exactly... they're dependable.
It's funny, eh? Each of them had one more point than Bergeron and Krejci had last year. So in terms of numbers, they've actually replaced them not too bad. Now, we know that Bergeron and Krejci bring a lot of other things, but
exactly. That's the thing, is they don't add that element. In that regard. And we're also talking about a Boston team that flamed out in the spring last season as well. It wasn't their deepest performance, one of their best regular season performances, no doubt, but that didn't translate into the spring. But yeah, you kind of look down that Boston lineup and it's like, wow, it does feel weird to be scared of these personnel individually. Like, obviously Pastrnak is a mega star. Marchand used to be at that level and is still a very effective player. McAvoy is one of the best defensemen in the league. Like, those guys are very impressive. But then you go down the rest of it and it's like, well, this doesn't quite feel like a team that has been battling for the division for much of the year. So there's that advantage to having them. Same time, you look at the season series and it's not just the fact that Toronto lost those games. It's the way that it kind of happened and how it feels a lot like the first time of facing Boston in this era, 2018, where they were very, very relentless on Toronto's weaker defensive core, especially the guys who weren't as mobile. They used their forecheck and they played off the rush to burn them and force them to make plays that they weren't necessarily comfortable making. Now, same time, Florida did a great job of that too when they faced them last year. So I think it's kind of a pick your poison thing. But that all kind of just goes back to the question of why was this the layout they chose to begin with if those were your two potential opponents. So I think on a technical term, they do have a better matchup with Boston, even if the record doesn't reflect that. At the same time, what's going to be most important is Toronto playing Toronto's best game and playing through that more than trying to react to other teams, which I feel has been a bit too much of a focus in recent years, trying to counter one opponent at a time instead of being at your peak selves and being the ones who dictate the pace of play.
And we all know when you come to play Boston, it's not just about, you know, matching up the players the way I did, kind of, head for head. It's what Boston brings with it. You're still going to have to deal with Trent Frederick and his nonsense, Brad Marchand and his nonsense. You get Pat Maroon again, who you've seen a lot lately, and you're sort of going to be up against that style of, maybe not quite as mean as before, but with the way the Bruins power play goes and the way David Pastrnak performs on it and how sort of porous the Leafs penalty kill has been, you know, one of the things I'm pretty concerned about is them being able to goad Toronto into some pretty stupid penalties, and that power play could hurt Toronto bad.
Yeah, I think that's a definite concern. Like, if people look at that as, oh, well, we don't want to be pushed around by this team. And I think that's something that's fair to feel. But at the same time, what we saw in the playoffs last year is when they face these high-temperature teams and they try to match them in that regard, it usually just leads to a lot of PK time. They're not exactly going to be the team that's going to get away with everything. So there has to be that kind of, they can't just roll over and let them dictate how that stuff's gonna go. I understand the not wanting to be passive about it, but there needs to be some caution as well, and that's historically not been a thing that Toronto's been great with in the last few playoffs. I mean, the Department of Player Safety will tell you that. I think it's what, like, for the last six playoffs, they've had someone suspended, and that's not great. So it's definitely a concern. Now, at the same time, like, it's not unique to Boston either. Like, Florida was maybe the worst forward of any team that they faced in this era last year, or even like the last time they faced them 3 nights ago.
Yep.
So that's kind of your damned if you do, damned if you don't, and that's maybe part of this whole kind of snot push is, you know, that part's going to happen. You want to be equal to the task of it, but you got to be careful about how you approach it too. It's got to be kind of, it can't be passive, but it still needs to be above board as well. And it can't become a distraction from the task at hand either.
I'm assuming, or I'm curious, you know, assuming everyone's healthy, and we don't know that for sure, but Sheldon Keefe has alluded to the possibility that Yarncroke might be or should be ready, Max Domi should be ready, or are possibilities for game one. How would you want to line this up on the road to start it? And we saw Matthews, Domi, and Bertuzzi have a lot of success together, and I sort of like the idea of spreading out you know, your weapons a little bit, have Marner with Tavares. I don't love Nylander down on the third line as much, but the thing they've been doing, you know, in balancing him back and forth, playing some with Tavares and Marner is interesting. And it's interesting to me how that would match up. Like, who do you then want taking on Pasternak? Because neither, you know, Matthews is a guy you trust no problem in his own end. Bertuzzi and Domi as his line mates, not so much. It looked like they were willing to try kind of Marner, Tavares, McMahon as a bit of a shutdown line. It's a kind of an untraditional one. You know, how would you set your lines? Do you think they'll go back to Marner's, Matthews? And how would you want to match up with Boston?
I did like that combination that they had a couple of days ago, or I guess the last couple of weeks, where they had the Domi, Bertuzzi, and Matthews together. The underlyings on that line, I know, are really good. They had something like 65% of the expected goals together, which, granted, when he played, when Matthews and Marner were together with Nyes, their actual goals were really high as well, and people will point to that as a good reason to just kind of stick with that instead. But this is working, and it's something that's working while being able to add some layers of talent throughout the lineup. Now, the question of matching and trying to shut down, for me, this kind of just kind of goes back to the point of, you want to be the team that's dictating this sort of stuff. I understand that it's on the road and you're kind of thinking about this stuff, but one, you're not going to get that decision all the time anyway. They're going to have last change and they're going to work around it. And two, if you believe in your team, you should be able to play through that line. Like, looking at that trio of Heinen, Zach, and Pasternak, obviously Zach is a good player, Heinen's a decent player, Pasternak is a superstar, but you should feel reasonably confident that either your MVP caliber center or two of your high superstar wingers or even your star center should be able to at least survive those minutes, if not dictate them themselves. For me, it's more optimizing how they can control the puck when they have it. And I think the top six that they were running over the past couple of weeks is good. I like the McMahon, Tavares, and Marner line as well. And there are opportunities sometimes to put Nylander and Marner together. And I actually really like that. I wish there was more I wish there was more time with them together. I think they elevate it. It's weird because they get treated as this like Team Jacob, Team Edward, Twilight weirdo rivalry stuff. We do this to guys every few years in Toronto. The story never changes in that regard. But because of that, no one really thinks about them as a potential pair themselves. And I think those two might elevate each other more than any combination of the four. I think the fact that they're both different types of playmakers who can both shoot if they need to creates mismatches for other teams. That they can play a cycle, but they can also play a direct rush or have Marner holding on the puck waiting for a chance. Every offensive attack with those two on the ice together is a little bit different. And I think that has value, whereas you kind of know what happens when you're putting one of them with one of the two centers. You know what style of play they're going to go for every time. It's just a matter of whether they're skilled enough to get through you anyway. So it'd be nice to see if there's some chances to rotate them together throughout the postseason as well. I think the bigger questions probably come towards the bottom six and whether they're going to go full traditional fourth line or traditional third line or try to mix in a little bit of talent as well. I guess the biggest question there is going to be whether or not Nick Robertson stays in the mix.
Do you think he will? Do you think he's earned enough trust? Because he just keeps scoring. He's getting no minutes, but he just keeps scoring. We've talked about how, you know, bottom six offense from the bottom six has been a problem for this group. Do you think he's shown Keefe enough, or when we see that game one lineup, is he going to be sitting out again?
I think he should. I mean, that's the obvious question. Over the last 25 games, he actually has the highest goals per 60 of anyone on the Leafs, 5-on-5, ahead of Matthews, ahead of Bertuzzi, ahead of Tavares, ahead of McMahon, like the guys that you associate with them scoring. Because he's not playing very many minutes and he's not playing in every single game, but then you put him out there and he makes something happen. At the end of the day, this team has desperately needed depth scoring in the playoffs, whether it's because the top guys have scored, but it's just not enough to get them all the way over, or because those guys go cold and need some help. I think having a guy who can finish is very important there. And you look to the bottom ends of the lineup, and when you do that kind of traditional time-killing fourth line, you're not going to find very many minutes for them anyway.
Right.
If they're going to sit there and kill time, why not have someone who can at least take a chance and sometimes get a mismatch on an opposing on the opposing group? Whether or not that means he's in the four slot or somebody else with some skill goes down for him to go up. That remains to be seen. But for me, I would put him there. Whether or not the team does it, much different story. Yeah. It seems like he's slowly but surely winning Keefe over. He's been playing a little bit more as things go. But the fact that he hasn't been a daily raises some eyebrows there.
Especially with Yarncroke coming back in, right? You got to worry about the PK as well. Who's going to play on that if you take like a Doer out?
But I think with Yarncroke coming back, it actually almost gives him a better chance because you're not relying on Doer as your PK crutch in that regard. He becomes a little bit more expendable because you're looking at him more as a 5-on-5 guy at that point. He hasn't given you a ton there, so maybe that's an excuse to kind of push two of the guys out. I guess Reeves would be the other one, which I know a lot of people don't really want to hear, but at the same time, and I guess it's hard to say it after he scored a goal the other night, but
sweet goal.
he's that was the 70 HSM goal we were all waiting for that night. Him and Brody.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It had to be the guys with the numbers in the 70s that don't score.
Yeah.
For me, I'd be looking at having him in that mix and trying to have your 12 most skilled guys in the lineup. I think the team is still snotty and aggressive enough if they have them. It's not like, obviously, like Robertson's no enforcer, but he's not going to like run away from anybody either. He still kind of keeps with that identity. And then on the flip side, it's like, is there going to be a heavy for Reeves to spend his time with? Like, Frederick's around, but he's not truly a heavy.
Maroon to be the only other, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, but we've seen Maroon in the playoffs. He's not going to go exactly looking for your traditional scrap that you want out of a guy like Reeves. So he's basically going to be for forecheck and yap for most of the series anyway, which again, he's done at a better level than I expected in the second half. Yeah. But I'll take the 15 goals and Yap on a team that's needed it. So we'll see.
Well, you mentioned TJ Brody, and to me, that's going to be one of the interesting questions here on this back end. And I've sat there and I've looked at it and I've looked at it, and I don't know what the hell I would do to set this up. I think there's been days where I could easily see a scenario where TJ Brody isn't in that top six, and yet I look at it and I still feel like when it comes down to who is Keith going to trust, whether it, you know, who is it going to be a Liljegren who maybe has to come in or out, or I think he's going to want Brody in there. I don't want to see any more of Brody and Riley for a little while. I think Brody's had long stretches where when he was back on the left side, he's looked not too bad. Lyubushkin hasn't looked good with Riley either. Edmondson's been beat up since coming over, and he was injured plenty before that, and he's been injured since he got here as well. I guess we're going to trust that the Benoit and McCabe thing, like, to me, that's about the only one that I look at and I go, I'm pretty sure that's how they're going to start this, is with that pair. Do you agree? And how would you set up the blue line around that, you know, that pair if you have them together?
It's so tough right now, because everybody has a much different opinion on this group, and it's hard to really dispute it because there's no one who's really winning you over this year. Like, Riley's been Riley, and that's good on him. But at the same time, he hasn't been like Norris Riley. He's been very good Riley, and you're hoping that he elevates to playoff Riley now.
Right.
And then you wonder who you're putting with him, and it's like, okay, well, everyone's like, oh, well, he's played a Lyubushkin a bunch, but that hasn't really been good. We've had a couple good games of it 2 years ago and a couple good games of it now, and it's been not great ever since. You look at Liljegren, who I think should be a mainstay, and I think has been one of their guys who you can trust every night, but that hasn't always been the case in Keith's mind.
He got run a couple of times there when they played Boston this year, and it didn't go very well. One of them, obviously, he got injured, but you know, he is, when you mentioned that Boston forecheck likes to get on Toronto defense, he is target one, it looks like.
Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, it's like, if you put someone in his place, are they going to be much more effective in that regard? Because he is one of their more mobile guys who can make a pass.
And as we've talked about, Toronto has struggled to score, and part of it is getting the puck up to these forwards. And how much of Lyubushkin, Edmondson, McCabe, Benoit, you know, if you don't have a Liljegren in there, it's going to be tough to get the puck out of your own end.
Absolutely. I think this is something people forget in this whole mix. Like, as this team moves to trying to be 6-3, 6-4, 6-5 every day on every shift on the blue line, they look to Vegas last year and they're like, oh yeah, that's the example. They had six big men, and it's like, they had six big men who can make plays.
Right.
They had guys who knew how to get out of the zone and link up. I think for them, the playmaking was more important. And then the fact that they were able to find guys who also had a bit of range to them is an obvious bonus. But you need to be able to escape, and you need to be able to make decisions. And I don't think that's what the guys that they've brought in have had. Again, though, it's who do you trust? So you've got Riley, who I think everyone reasonably trusts. You have Liljegren, who's good enough, but we're not sure where his trust level is within the team. And there are some people who don't necessarily like the way he plays. McCabe has been very good. I'm going to give him a lot of credit. He's been better than I expected, and yep, he's a mainstay in this group. Brody's an incredibly tough question, because you know that he is worse than he was in previous years. He was also extremely good in previous years. And where he is now is a very tough question of, okay, so where's the line here? You can't trust him to play play against the elites the same way he's used to.
Keith's been going to him for a long time. Hey, it's going to be hard for Keith to say, you're not in my top six.
Yeah, there's definitely that. And at the same time, he's still probably their fourth best guy. Like that's the kicker here, is like the other guys aren't. The other guys look better because they don't play those tougher assignments, and I don't think they even look that much better when you think about it. Like when we've seen them, when even with like Benoit this year, he's been better than we expected, but he also it's not always top comp. In fact, it's very rarely that sort of competition. We don't really know what his level is going to be when he's got to play against a Pastrnak every second shift at this point. That pairing with him and McCabe has done well. One, on the strengths of McCabe, but two, because they haven't always been on the elite. So, like, right. for me, laying them out is very tricky. I think Benoit stays in your lineup as well, obviously. I think people who are listening to me are like, oh, you're even questioning that, but I look at him as the fifth in terms of your total package of ability here. And then it becomes a much tougher question, because then it's like, okay, well, there's only one spot left for both the guys we acquired at the deadline, yeah, and for Giordano. I would have loved to have included Timmins in that, but he had his last audition chance last night, and it didn't go as I had hoped. It would have been nice to see him do something there, because they could use that puck moving ability, but he hasn't shown anything against even like mid level competition, let alone tough. So yeah, he's out of that mix. But that's just it. It's like, okay, so you give Lyubushkin the credit there because he's going to be the righty, and that could theoretically be your six. But then it's like, okay, well, why did you acquire Edmondson? Why aren't you giving the guy who has playoff pedigree his opportunity? I don't think he's one of the six best guys, but I think that seniority and that reputation and the fact that they paid assets to get him might go a longer way to getting him in. So, like, to be totally frank with you, I have no idea how they're going to lay this out, and I don't know if there's going to be a consensus answer here. I don't even know who I'm really trusting into top pairs, and this is where we go back to that 2018 question. It's where it's like, I think this is their weak spot right now. Is they're, it's going to be, they have a lot of options, the opposition, to attack them on the screen in this group, especially when you come at teams of pace and you rush a lot like Boston does. So that could end up being their biggest weak spot in this series.
Yeah, I can't see any way that you can have all of Lyubushkin, Benoit, and Edmondson in there. Something's got to give. Somebody's right. Got to be able to move the puck. And so who you're sitting down, you know, Benoit's your guy. You went and got him last year, and he's played reasonably well. But you traded assets to get Lyubushkin and Edmondson. So I don't know, man.
For me, my answer is Edmondson out. Yeah. But I don't know where this is going to go.
Right.
I guess the beauty of having 8,000 defensemen is this is going to be shuffleable as the series goes. But
that's Keith. He likes to do that in the playoffs. I think he tends to panic a little bit too quick and starts shuffling the deck. And I think that frenetic energy kind of can go through the team a little bit, right? That if it looks like he's panicking, or he's, you know, after a bad period or a bad game, and all of a sudden the next day all the lines are in a blender again. I think there's been it's pretty frequent that he reacts too much too soon.
Yeah, perhaps. But I mean, we also before him would argue about guys not moving around enough. So Babcock finding that
balance, refusing to change anything.
So finding that balance is tough. I think the best balance is whatever is winning the hockey game. So we forget about the rest later.
Yeah, true enough. The last part of this is the goaltending. I don't think anybody has any doubt that Boston has the edge here. I'll be curious to see whether or not they continue to roll as a tandem, which they've done most of the year. That part is interesting because Allmark has remained fantastic, but since around the All-Star break, Swayman's had like an .885 or something like that save percentage. But one more wrinkle to it is that he's also had two games in that stretch against Toronto where he's only given up one goal each. So where if he's struggling, he's not struggling against us. On the other side, I don't know. Samsonov, I assume, will be the guy. He's something like 18-5 since he came back from his little break from the season, but not a strong finish. Joseph Woll still doesn't look quite right since the injury. The high ankle sprain for any goalie is a nightmare. You know, do you expect Samsonov, who, to be fair, was good and at times probably better than Vasilevsky last year, do you expect to see good Samsonov? Do you expect the struggle here late in the season to continue? Is there any way of predicting that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I for one, I think he's going to be the guy to start. Like, there's very little question in my mind. They're obviously thrilled with the way that he was able to turn around his season midway through. He's the guy that they brought in to do this job, and they have the confidence in. So he's going to be the one who begins it, whether or not. Because obviously, like, this last week was not very encouraging for people. Seeing him give up the, I think it's like 11 goals on 52 shots or something like that across those games. Yeah, not ideal, but you also look at the context of those games. Like, I think as even during the New Jersey game, you started to see that kind of shift to, all right, we're now a get one guy a milestone team for the next week.
I actually think it was pretty smart that they didn't play him in those Florida or Tampa games, just because it always felt like those games were going to be a mess and just kind of all over the place. Don't let him be the one getting rung up out there.
Yeah, for sure. And again, we were already seeing it in the Detroit game.
Yeah,
seeing it shift that direction, especially in the second half of it after he had Matthews had scored that first goal. I just to kind of sidebar, I will give. I think it's a lot of people are giving Keith shit for calling that a distraction. I don't have any problem with him saying that. One, he was answering a question. Yep. Two, I think it's hard to watch those games and not think that they were forcing the puck.
And he said to himself, like, he wanted to see it too. Like, he wasn't saying this isn't a big deal.
He was obliging in the distraction.
Right.
But it undeniably was one. Like, sure. Let's be clear. Maybe a distraction is good in the last few days of the season because it gives you something to play for. Yeah. But definitely wasn't something that the goalies must have enjoyed, whether you were Samsonov or Jones. And that's why I'm a little tempered on that last week and being like, I don't know if I'm going to get too much on anyone's case. They were facing some not great chances going their way, and I don't think anyone wants to overexert themselves when everything was more or less locked in.
Right.
As for what they get out of him, I mean, like you said, he was really good in the Tampa series. He was fine, and he was fine against Florida. Like, nothing really to write home about one way or another. Obviously, his team scoring two and no more, no less in front of him every night didn't help things very much.
Up until he got hurt there, yeah.
Yeah, so it's entirely possible he gives them something. While people wanted to see more of a step after he came back from injury, obviously high ankle sprains are tough to recover from. He's going to need a little bit more time there, and he's still growing into the league. Like, he had a really hot start, but that isn't always going to be how guys continue moving forward. But those are two guys who can step up and help you out as things go. And if not, then I don't know, find out if Martin Jones can turn the clock back several years, see how that Matt Murray conditioning stint's going. But yeah, I think the bigger issue in that goaltending battle is on the other side, the fact that they have, like, Boston's duo is incredible. They are the outside of Pasternak, they're the MVPs of that team, and that's impressive given that they have some super high-end skaters. Like, I think Swayman, until these last few weeks, have started to establish himself as one of the top end guys in the league. Ullmark has been super dependable over the past couple years as well, and obviously it doesn't seem like he's going to be around there for too much longer. I know they poked around a little bit to see what the market was on him this year, and I assume they will do so again in the summer, just because realities of having a roster like that, and he deserves his minutes too. But that's where it gets tough, is they, like, Toronto's guys can be good, and when they're both good, that's a great tandem to have. But then when the other guys are both good, like, that's what elevated a team that no one really expected to be great into the best regular season team in history last year and kept them in the division mix this year. It's going to be hard to go up against their pair, and it's definitely one of the bigger mismatches of this series.
Well, last thing for you then. I saw you talking to someone on Twitter the other day. You quote tweeted one, and it was in regards to Florida. You said Toronto's good enough to win the series, but probably not good enough that they'd be the team you'd bet on to do it. They're not going to be the favorite in this. The Athletic put out their kind of statistical analysis of this series on Thursday morning. They sort of had it at kind of 53% Boston. So, you know, I think for everything we've talked about and the way this saws off, it's supposed to be a pretty close series. But that statement you made when talking about Florida, is that sort of how you feel about this one too? Or do you got this one kind of leaning further than maybe The Athletic does?
No, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, honestly, to me, this one's a toss up. And from a projection perspective, Andy McNeil over at Canada Sports Betting is going to have some interesting stuff okay. over the next couple of days where he does his projections and simulations and gives his insight on one where he sees the series going and where it matches up to the markets. I think the markets right now have Boston at a slight edge, and I don't think that's completely unfair.
Sure.
Like I said, I think that Toronto has the better roster on paper, particularly in terms of skaters and especially in terms of forwards. But at the same time, say it's a match that Boston's really liked, and goaltenders can be great deciders in the playoffs, and that is a position of strength for them more so than it is for Toronto. I would say that Toronto is very capable of winning this series, and if they were to win it, I would not be surprised in the slightest. It could even be the slightly more likely outcome to me. I'm not 100% on that yet. I'm going to be right down to the wire in my mind on where I think this is going to go. But it's not a given. And I think at the same time, that's been the reality of this year when we've looked at this roster, is they're good enough to be in the mix, but not good enough to expect it.
Right.
The good thing about that is that now that they got to win a playoff series thing is out of the way, the tension is a little bit less so.
Sure.
The expectation a little bit less so. I mean, now that Boston's on the other side, that raises it back up a little bit too.
Slay the dragon, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I think looking at where we expected the year to be, this is not a surprise to come to a series and be like, okay, it's another really great team, the typical Atlantic Division. You're not going to escape playing a high end matchup right off the hop. This is a group that's capable of doing it. I don't know if they're going to. I'm not going to put a safe bet on it. But it's going to make for something that should be a lot of fun at the very least. I think I wouldn't be too upset if they lost it. Which is really all you just need to ask for, like, a close effort. Yeah. And if they can get through this, then obviously, it makes things a lot easier down the road, and the math changes, even further, and who knows where they could go from there.
Yeah, playoffs start on Saturday. It's Toronto and Buffalo. Buffalo. Probably not.
They wish.
Probably not Buffalo. Yeah, Toronto and Boston on Saturday night at 8:00. What are you going to be doing over at CanadaSportsBetting.ca? What are you working on? What's coming up? And what can we expect out of you throughout the playoffs?
Much of what I've been doing throughout the season. So previews before every single game that give you both a hockey perspective and a little bit of a betting perspective. Something that kind of guides you through what the best options are across the various books. We try not to be too aggressive and be like, oh, these are clear locks, but at least kind of steer you in the right direction. Even if you're not looking to put some money on the game, just still gives you a good look at each individual matchup. So those will continue. Tomorrow I will continue my weekly coast-to-coast series where I look at all of the Canadian games going on throughout the weekend. I'll probably include the ones that don't start on Saturday or Sunday as well, just so we can have an early look. Sure. I guess that would probably be the Edmonton series. And we'll see. There might be some other stuff that comes out throughout. Like, this is the most fun time of the year. And if there's some room for me to add a few more words here and there, I'm eager to talk. So, so yeah, you'll see me poking around. Worst case, I'll be yelling into the void on Twitter as as always. So I guess not really a void, but like throwing fuel into the fire.
Yeah, rolling around in the mud with the rest of us. That's it's a really healthy way to watch a hockey game. So
yeah.
I appreciate your time, man. I appreciate your insight. I always enjoy when you jump on the podcast. Thanks for doing it.
Oh, no worries. It's always a good time coming on, so I appreciate you having me.
Okay, there goes Jeff Viette. And Jeff's got a ton of insight, and he's a great follow on hockey Twitter, just at Jeff Viette. We'll link to that in the show notes, as well as to his work at CanadaSportsBetting.ca if you want to read his stuff there. Always interesting to touch base with him, and and sort of flush out what this Leafs-Bruins series is going to look like. And we won't have to wait long. Starts on Saturday night, and they'll get right after it to open the playoffs. So hope you enjoy that. Hope you all have a great weekend. I'm not likely to enjoy it all that much, even if it's going well. I tend to stress during these playoff games, especially the early ones. So leave me alone. Don't tweet at me. Don't message me. Don't expect to hear from me during these games. Just leave me alone, okay? That's where we'll wrap this one up for another week of Tall Can Audio. Like I said, hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy the playoff hockey. Enjoy the baseball. Enjoy whatever you got going on. And we'll see you on Monday.
That's it. Cannot work under these conditions. If anybody wants me, I'll be downstairs at McDougal's. Call the weekend guy. I don't care.